This is Bootstrapped Web. We're back at it. How's it going, Jordan?
Good, good, Brian. Nice to speak with you again. We're being consistent. We missed 1 week, but we're back, baby.
Yeah, we're still at it. You know, we'll miss some weeks here and there. You know, it's kind of busy running some businesses and taking care of little kids and traveling and all that fun stuff.
Yes, but if the kids can go back to school, you and I can go back to podcasting.
Exactly.
Cool. So what are we talking about today?
Yeah, it seems like a lot of stuff is happening on both of our ends, as usual. But I mean, on my end, I've got some movement. Some things are happening on Ops Calendar. I can talk about some kind of fun updates. Things are happening there. Audience Ops is having a pretty good month, which feels good after a couple of not so good months. and I'm running some tests that I haven't tested before over there. And I'm hiring for a developer right now, and that's always fun and challenging. So that's what's happened on my end. We'll get into it. How about you?
On my side, today we launched the first paid marketing campaign for the checkout product. So we've been working on this for, I guess it's over a year now. It's really been in the market being pushed without that requirement for a demo for about 6 months. And now is the first time we are going to proactively reach out and pull people into a funnel. So I want to talk about what that funnel looks like and how we had it built and the key pieces. And then we can kind of keep track of it over the next few months on how we make adjustments and how things work. The other thing to talk about is just some new challenges. We're 12 people full time now, and that's starting to require a new level of planning and budgeting and estimates and onboarding people. Yeah, that sort of thing. And we're starting to feel the effects of people specializing instead of having 10 things on their plate. Now each person has two or three things, and all of a sudden people are getting better at their thing and more expertise in their field. And it's some of the challenges that I'm having with starting to feel out of touch. It's already 12 people and I already feel like I'm out of touch with people. So how do I come back to that? I'd love to hear some of your thoughts on like how to do one-on-ones and how to, I don't know, I want to have strong relationships with people, and I don't want to be surprised by bad things, people being unhappy or weird conflicts that I'm not aware of. So I like don't want to fall out of touch.
Yeah. I'd like to talk about that too, because I don't know what the hell I'm doing either. So
yes. Last time we spoke, we got into details about Ops Calendar, about your pricing, the naming of the pricing, the positioning, the demo, all this stuff. So give us an update on what's been going on that front. You remember you made some changes right away?
I'm pretty excited today, like literally today, because I looked at the numbers for this past month of September, and in a lot of ways, Ops Count, like this big marketing push, was kind of starting from literally zero on the 1st of September in terms of like zero traffic. I wasn't really talking about it much for a while there. Wasn't doing any content, wasn't doing any push. To today, I have been talking about it more. We posted our first of many weekly blog articles. I started making updates to the features on the app. And now we're getting a few hundred visitors a week, both organically, some coming from our list, some coming from this podcast, some elsewhere. It's just cool to see those numbers start to tick up. And as I talked about last time, the only way to try out the app is to request a demo, basically. And I did take your advice. I took the word request a demo off and I made it like get started. Still, it's a form that gets to my calendar and you book a time with me one-on-one.
Right. It's with the understanding that fewer people will do it, but more qualified people.
Yes. And still, this is this first month of the push, and I did not expect, I'm not running any ads, I did not expect a ton of traffic. I certainly really didn't expect many demos to come through, but I think at least 10 have come through this month, just demo requests, filling out the form, and then booking a time on my calendar. Now, many of those are people who've been in my audience or been on the list for a while, and they've heard me talking about it, and they're like, oh, yeah, I think now's a good time for me to check this out. I think I could actually use this. But there have been a few who literally just started Googling for this tool and landed on Ops Calendar and requested the demo. I mean, an hour ago today, I had a call with this guy in Germany. Has never heard of me before, does not even know what Audience Ops is or CastJam or this podcast or anything. He was literally Googling for like content calendar software or something like that. landed on it, he thought we're like this well-established company, you know?
And yeah, the site looks good. The product's good.
And, you know, had a great call with him. I mean, the feedback was, okay, it looks great, but it's still missing a few features. And he gave me a few competitors that he was like kind of comparing. He was like, you know, those guys, they have those features that we're looking for, but their interface is shit and we don't like it. We really like yours. We like where you're going with it, but we're looking for something a little bit more mature.
Conversation with a stranger. That's a win.
Yeah, I see that as a win. He was really cool and open about this feedback. But I mean, that was one guy. The other demos, I had two demos yesterday, two the day before. I mean, they ended up signing up. And what was really exciting for me is I would be talking to like the founder of the company, and they would usually, for most of these, they would pull in their head of marketing on the call with them to see the thing that I'm showing them. And the head of marketing, the person who's kind of like managing the blog, managing the writers and everything. The person who would actually be using the tool on a daily basis.
Yeah.
The reactions I've been getting from that person again and again is like, oh, wow, that is awesome. I'm getting that oh, that's the thing that I've been missing. Yes. Like that reaction is just it's gold, you know?
I just got the tingles.
It's awesome, you know? And like it's calls like that. And the fact that these calls are just literally dripping in inbound organically, and we haven't even really started pushing much yet. These just feel like good signs to me, right?
Yeah. That's what keeps you motivated. Because if you are convinced by other people that you're onto something, and if you just keep going with it, it'll hit. Then that's the motivation. You see that feedback. Yeah, that's why I love the demos in the early stages. Man, you just talk to people, and those reactions of, oh, that's what I want.
Yes.
Those things keep you going.
And I've got live chat on the site. I am the person manning the live chat. I don't care how busy I am. I'll get interrupted to talk to anybody who wants to talk about it. You know, I mean, this is all like organic inbound stuff is well and good, but I know that I need to do more to push on outbound.
Right. So what do you see as the initial outbound?
I kind of started doing this week. I went to Quora. And I just started searching for keywords like content calendar tools. And there are like 10 plus Quora threads like that are perfect for me to answer. I mean, like, and this actually went into my initial research a year ago for like, should I go into this product or not? And being able to see that there is so much activity of people actively asking for recommendations for this sort of tool on Quora, on Facebook groups, on other communities, on Twitter. That's a really good sign that like these are places where I can insert myself and actually outbound, go reach out to these people, get my voice heard in these threads, you know? And so I started doing that yesterday. I wrote a really long answer to a Quora question, and then I asked my whole team to upvote it and everything. And then right now it's like the top of like this big thread, and there's like 30 answers, and mine is there. It's got some videos on it. It's got like a link to Ops Calendar. And there's like 10 more questions on Quora just like that one that I have listed out in a document that I'm going to get to and start answering.
So that's something you can do and pick up some traffic.
Yeah.
Based on doing the work once. That's nice.
Yeah. And I think that Quora is not the kind of thing that's like just sustainable every month forever. It's the kind of thing that you'll do like a big spurt of activity
to get rolling.
But I think it's also a good jumping off point for some outbound outreach. So like I could just click through and see the people who've been active on this thread and start to hunt down their contact info.
Yeah. It also sounds to me like there's a good amount of search happening already. So I would consider bidding on competitor names in AdWords.
Yeah, I would like to get into some paid ads at some point. I haven't started that yet. The one thing that I did start is content. I've got the Audience Ops team writing content for Ops Calendar. Just this past week, we published the first article of... We have like about 13 or 15 articles planned out in the calendar going forward from here. So that stuff will start to help with the organic traffic and right, having these assets. Yeah.
And opt-in onto the page.
Oh yeah, content upgrades everywhere.
Right.
Yeah, but what I did already publish like 2 weeks ago, I think I talked about this, is how I expanded from like a one page website to like the tour page with 5 dedicated pages. Like this is where I was really surprised. I did not expect that change to pay off in any way anytime soon. But I'm looking at the numbers. Our organic inbound traffic of new first time visitors has been up ever since I launched those pages. And I mean, literally today I had a demo call with a guy who told me that he Googled some random, you know, search term, and that got them onto the site. And like, these pages are like 2 weeks old, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Very nice. Very nice.
So that stuff feels good. It's not making a ton of money right now, but it's like a lot of good activity, you know?
Yes. You just kind of build on that momentum. You go from 3 demos a week to 5 to 10, then you do 3 a day, 1 per day signs up, you get 5 new trials every week. You're starting to get somewhere. I am terrible about looking at Google Analytics and trying to look for insights, but we did it recently and found that the number of uniques that go to our homepage has skyrocketed, and only about 30% of them make it to the actual product page that we want them to. So we might just replace our homepage with the product page.
Okay, here's a little hack. I am terrible about reviewing analytics and metrics and like how are things doing and like making those optimizations. But I know that I need to. I know that I need to look at this on a weekly basis and see how are the numbers, how do they compare to last week, what changed this week. And so I'm trying to force myself to get into this habit. So I've made a few hacks. Just I know that other people are great at this stuff. For me, it's just one of my weaknesses. I'd rather be working on a site somewhere, designing something, writing something, than pouring through analytics data. That's just me. One thing is I did set up a reporting spreadsheet for myself, like the key metrics that I'm going to track in this launch of Ops Calendar, you know, in terms of like new visits, organic visits, paid traffic, new demo requests, new trials, you know, MRR, churn. I need to be looking at those on a weekly basis. So I set up a spreadsheet and then an automated weekly email every Friday. Hey, go update your spreadsheet to remind myself, right? Now, the other thing is to try to, and I wasn't really going to talk about this on the podcast, but I will. I am recording these video journal entries, and I have not released any of these. I don't know if I ever will release any of these, but the thought is, if I record these every week of me literally going through my metrics and giving a total update of everything that happened, everything that's stressing me out, everything that I'm excited about, showing you the real numbers, showing you the things that we're working on and where we're at in the launch of this SaaS product. It's like a little 10 to 20 minute update every week that I'm recording and I'm dropping into a folder somewhere. And who knows, maybe a year from now, I'll release this as like as one of those like long form kind of watch the story unfold in real time.
Yeah, I like that.
But it's also a way to kind of give myself pressure of like, it's Friday, I have to record my journal entry, and I'm like keeping myself accountable to an audience that may or may not ever see this, but it would be cool if they do Sunday.
Like, you know? I think you should keep that up. I think you'll be happy if you can keep that up.
Yeah.
Well, I had a...
And like if nothing, like it is taking more time to do that, but at the same time, it's keeping me doing the right things, which is like checking in on progress. So,
yes, you know. I like that combination of pressure plus actually doing the right thing along with it. I've had advice. Tim Conley actually gave me the advice that every Friday I should make a 5 to 10 minute video for basically a quick state of the union and send it out to the whole team. So, I want to talk about our marketing campaign first, but after we talk about that and trying to be in touch with everyone. And I heard the analogy that I sounded accurate, but I didn't like the feeling of that. It's like spinning dishes. You got to give a little one each love and then keep moving on to the next one. But you can't go too long without giving a dish some love. And I feel like it's becoming a little transactional where I like talk to someone for like 5 minutes and be like, all right, cool. I'm good with them for a few days. You know, like that's not how I want to do it. It's not enough.
Yeah. All right. Well, over to you. Tell me about this marketing funnel.
Well, I just want to say it's great to hear that momentum talking to people, you know, just yeah, let's keep doing
that. That stuff is fuel, man. It's like, if everything was completely quiet and I'm doing all this work on it, then I'd be really, really freaking out.
Yeah, it's tough. But it's tough to keep going.
But like, there's nothing like hearing people give feedback and ask questions, and you can tell that they have pains that they want solved. You know, that stuff just keeps you going.
I love that situation of a CEO and their marketing person on a call, because that's something that what I keep telling individual people on my team is, think like an owner. Don't think, oh, this sucks and I can't do it. Think about, what do I need to fix this? And a lot of employees don't think about spending money, because they assume that they can't spend money because they're an employee, they're not the owner. When in reality, I would love to spend $100 if it makes your life easier and the job done better. So I can really see that situation of, it's happened before. I'll find a tool. I actually found the editor that we're using. We're rebuilding our page editor. It's actually a MicroConf guy who built the software. And I found him, connected with him, hit him up on Skype, Twitter, Facebook, until I got him on the line. And then I brought in my tech team and I said, look at this. We could use this as a starting point instead of starting from scratch. And then it's like, how much money is it? The question isn't how much money is it. It's the question to your team. In your situation, the CEO is looking at the marketer saying, would you use this? Would this make our content launch on time? And then it's like, forget the money. It doesn't even matter. I'm paying this person thousands of dollars a month. You're talking about a tool that costs $50 a month that would make their job done better. It's like the price becomes
irrelevant. Totally. And it also speaks to the power of selling to businesses and to selling to the mid to upper tier, where the person using the tool inside the company may not be the actual decision maker, the person paying the credit card bill. But getting that buy-in from both ends, and because then it becomes like, this is just part of their system in their business. And once it becomes solidified and it's into their workflow, it's like, that's gold, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me of LeadFuse. You know, when you look at the pricing page, you're like, that sounds expensive. If you're running a solo business, it's expensive. If you have a sales team of 10 people that you're spending tens of thousands of dollars on, $200, $300, $400, $500 a month is not actually expensive if it makes their job more profitable. But anyway, all right. So I want to talk about the marketing campaign. I've learned a lot in the process of launching this thing. I have learned about my limitations and how to hire away from those limitations. And so it's a little hard to describe. So I'm going to try to talk about it so people can kind of visualize what we're doing. If it gets confusing, help me out, because you'll probably understand what I'm trying to do. So the first thing I did was I got myself out of the way. So I said, I'm not going to be responsible. I'm not going to write the content. And no matter what we do, we launch it on time. Because I always have this tendency of like, wait, let me just check it out to make sure the copy is just the way that I would write it. And so what I told everyone involved was, you give me to me ahead of time. If I don't get back to you, it gets published the way it is. Right. So like, I tried to set it up for success from the beginning and got myself out of the way. So I hired our buddy Keith Perhack and his marketing agency, and his stuff is just awesome. The level of professionalism, the design, everything, super impressive. And then what I did is I connected him with a marketer that we just hired full time. So we have a first marketing hire. Hallelujah. Somebody actually focused on marketing. They're here in Portland. And so what we did was I hired them for a 2-week project. And that project wasn't you do everything. That project was you coordinate with Keith and the marketing agency. You're not responsible for doing everything. You're responsible that it gets launched and done. Right. So I like got myself out of the way. Like, somebody internally in the company is responsible for getting it done. Someone externally in the company is responsible for doing the majority of the actual work.
I got two quick questions. So when did you start this like initiative? Like, okay, we are going to start our paid marketing funnel. Like, how much time ago was that?
6 weeks.
6 weeks ago. Okay.
6 weeks. We talked about it and I hired Keith, and then we really started cranking on it 3 weeks ago.
Cool.
Yeah, but there's some lag time, and all that lag time is always my fault.
And the goal of this is to drive, what, new trials for the checkout product?
Yes. So we have a significant amount of MRR signing up every month as trials through inbound. And my goal is to double it. My goal is to take that and add another half, basically double it with our own efforts. So I don't really care how that happens. I mean, I do care, but I want it to double. So our first attempt at getting it to double is paid ads. So here's what we're doing. What we're doing is we are writing case studies. These are just blog posts with good design and a lot of work put into the blog post. A lot of screenshots and very intentional in what they're doing. So we're launching three different blog posts. We're starting off with one, but eventually we'll have three. The first one we call the eye popper. So we have several merchants that do multi-millions using the Cart Hook checkout. So we chose one, we talked to them, got a lot of detail. So our first one is the eye popper. Like, see how this company made $5.2 million last month with Cart Hook and their Shopify store. Then the next blog post will be credibility. So see how this well-known Shopify store uses Cart Hook. And then the third blog post will be feature specific, the feature that we want everyone to know that we have that nobody else has. So that it'll be, look how this other well-known Shopify store uses this specific feature and how they do it, right? So it's like we're trying to educate, but in steps. So first, eye-popping attention. The second one is credibility. And then the third one is drill down into a feature. So they're going to be like layered in over the next few weeks. The first one that launches is the eye-popper.
Yeah. And so those are kind of positioned as case studies, but still very much like talking about Cart Hook. Like, this is kind of
always, yes, in the context of benefits and results. And then, like, it's almost like the second half of the blog post is see how they do it in Cart Hook. Okay. So that's the blog post. So that's layer one. The opt-in on that blog post is to see an instant webinar on how they do it. So basically, the blog post is the what, and then you get to opt in for how. And that how is a 12-minute video of me running through a very quick demo of the product, but not like a boring, hey, first you click here and then you click here. It's more about, here are these companies that use it, and here's how they do it, and here's how easy it is to do this, and when you do this, this is the benefit you get out of it, and just kind of running through the highlights of the product for 12 minutes.
So that's like a pre-recorded thing?
Yes. So it's not like positioned as live. It's not pretending to be live when it isn't. It's just like a register for this instant webinar thing.
And all three of those blog posts all point to that.
All point to that. Exactly.
And are you doing any sort of, is it an email opt-in to get to that, or can you just click to it and see it?
It is. It's an email opt-in. And so when you opt in, you get redirected to the video page. And at the same time, you get put on a campaign in drip that hits you up over the next 7 days, once per day, that sells you on the free trial. And the video does the same thing. The video sells you on the free trial. And once you sign up for the free trial, that email sequence stops.
Got it. Yeah. I have similar a similar sequence set up in drip for audience ops. I'm curious, what do you put into that everyday sequence? What are you sending in those emails?
What we're doing is we are highlighting the key features, and we're doing it in that same context of like, here's what it does for you, right? Use, like, increase your average order value with upsells, improve your conversion rate with a customized checkout, recover more sales using automated cart recovery. So it's always like feature benefit, feature benefit, feature benefit, and then testimonials along with it, and credibility, and of course the call to action in the emails is sign up for a free trial. And if you sign up for the free trial, you get taken off of that email sequence, and now all of a sudden you get on the onboarding sequence, which is different. So what you end up having is you have three different pages that people land on. You have the case study, then you have the webinar page, and then you have the registration page, right? And we actually have a We don't link directly from the video to the registration. What we do is, because at this point, the person hasn't even seen the homepage, right? They went from a Facebook ad to the case study to the webinar opt-in page. Then they've opted in, they go to see a video. So at that point in time, they haven't seen pricing. So what we did is we have this in-between page where if you're on the video and I say, if you want to get started, start your 14-day trial by clicking the button below, you click on that button instead of sending them directly to the registration page that just has like fields and then they're going to get sticker shock with the price. We have like an in-between page that just highlights benefits, testimonials, key features, pricing, and then the sign-up page. And that what that also does, you've heard of something like that, like the in-between?
I think that makes sense, but do you have some sort of check in place to say, like, we know that this person has not viewed pricing or viewed the homepage before?
No, not yet. I guess we can do that, but right now.
But I mean, if that intermediate page has pricing and social proof and then a link to sign up, like that's good to have anyway. So
that's the thing. That page ends up being really valuable because then the other part of this whole funnel is the retargeting strategy.
Right. And that was what I was going to ask about. So you haven't gotten into the ad side of this yet. You're just talking about the assets that you put in place first.
Basically. Right. I think that's important to establish first. And then because those go along with the retargeting strategy, because there's a different ad based on where you last went, which page, how deep into the funnel did you get? That determines which ad set you see.
Okay. So do you want to get into the ads?
Yeah. So top level is cold traffic. And that we are, the intention is to grab attention, right? Just, are you the type of person that this appeals to? If so, when you click on it, you get to the case study, all of a sudden you're now on a different phase for the ads. Once you've clicked on the case study, but haven't yet opted in to the webinar, you get ads that are the call to action is to opt into the webinar. And it's selling the webinar. It's what you'll see on the webinar, what you'll find out, what we teach you, what step by step. So it's all about the next step. It's selling the next step in the funnel.
All right. So a couple questions. The retargeting ads, before we get to the cold ads, the retargeting ads, are those only shown to people who viewed the article, or are you showing to like any recent visitor to the whole site?
Right now let's talk about it separately. Because the first thing is to establish like the intentional traffic, the people in the funnel.
All right. Yeah. So the cold traffic that's just promoting the articles, the case study articles, that's people who have never heard of Card Hacker before. How did you target that? Is that like a lookalike audience? Is it an interest, or how did you target that?
Yeah, that's a combination of things, and that's the biggest guesswork in the whole process, and that's the part that we will be experimenting with over the next few weeks.
Yeah. I'm running some ads right now for audience ops, not for ops calendar yet. It's somewhat similar structure in the whole funnel. That's something that I've been working on this week is like, how to target the top level cold ads, using like a lot of times I've used the lookalike audience, but then I'm like filtering that even further with interests and I'm comparing different interests and, that's been kind of tough, but the goal there, of course, is just to get the cost per click low and make sure that the visitors are relevant, or quality.
That part is, that's the guesswork. So we're starting with what we think makes sense, right? So we have our email list and we can remove existing customers. Then we can take both our email list and the existing customer list and create lookalike audiences based on them. And then we can start to do, there's a lot of interests that are related to e-commerce and Shopify specifically. There's a lot of Facebook groups. There's a lot of fan pages. So that's our start. People who have already identified as associated with Shopify. That just makes the most sense.
Very cool. So then they've already clicked to the case study. They have not, they chose not to click to the webinar. Then they're going to see ads for the webinar.
Right. And then as soon as someone opts into the webinar and hits that webinar page, then the ad set changes again. And now that's selling the free trial. The same way the email sequence is selling the free trial and that webinar page itself, the video page. Yeah. So it's like this multi-layered approach, which I don't think I ever would have gotten done myself.
How much time has it been since they've like pressed go on the ads and on launching that stuff?
So that's at 4 p.m. today.
So it's starting today.
Yep, happens this afternoon. So
okay, cool.
I've vacillated between getting the team excited about it, but not getting them too excited. Because like we've said before, if you get ROI from an ad campaign from the day you launch it, you kind of got lucky. So we expect that it'll take a few weeks of spending and tweaking and optimizing and changing and guessing.
And how do you think about like lifetime value of a customer right now? And how profitable, like how do you know when this campaign is breaking even or not? Like how are you just considering like 3 months, like 9 months is the customer's lifetime? Like how are you just, what kind of assumptions are you making there?
Yeah, this is one of the things I liked most about the new marketer we hired, Ed. The beginning of the conversation, before I was like ready to dive into all these details, the first thing he said was, first, let's establish the business goals. How do we want this to contribute to the business? What does it need to contribute to the business in order to be considered successful? So that just focused us on, okay, we didn't start off with how much we're willing to spend. We went backwards. We went, how many new signups do we want? What's that going to lead into in paid customers? How much MRR does that add? And then what's realistic of an expectation on how much, right? So we went, if 100 people sign up, how many are we going to keep? And then based on that, how much MRR that adds. So then you can work backwards and say, okay, so for 100 signups, I'm willing to pay X. And the way I thought about it was the fantasy, the ideal is a 1 month payback period. Right, but that is, at least we have a decent chance of that because our first month is $300. So if someone signs up,
so if you can keep cost to acquire the customer through this funnel at 300 or less, then you're good.
Right. Then I can't complain. Right. So then it's okay. $300 for a paid customer. And so let's just say, for example, our conversion rate is from trial to paid is 33%. Then we need 3 signups. So we're basically willing to pay $100 per signup, which turns into $300 per customer.
Right. And that's still like a conservative thing to say, like 1 month is the lifetime. Cause obviously if they pay for 1 month and they're happy, they're going to probably stay for multiple more months and they will be worth more. But if you just think about your math in terms of that first month value.
Yeah. Well, this is the bootstrap version of the math, right? If you have $3 million in the bank, you're kind of willing to spend 6 months worth. And then you have more money to acquire customers, which leads you to beat your competitors, you know, and if you can get profitable in before you run out of money or raise more money. So the way we're talking and thinking is getting profitable, not just beating the market. I'll look forward to reporting back next week and then the week after, whether it's good or bad. I'll talk about what we think is working and what's not working.
You know, I guess I'll pick it up with what's been going on with Audience Ops because it's actually pretty similar. First of all, this month was supposed to be all about Ops Calendar. I was supposed to not really work on Audience Ops for a while, but I was talking with somebody in my mastermind group, and he was like, you know, he was asking me like, I wonder what would happen if you just didn't show the pricing for Audience Ops and put it behind like an email opt-in, you know. And I started to think about that. I was like, you know, I feel like I've tested everything on Audience Ops except for that. I've never tested not showing the pricing. And I've always just worked under the assumption that like it's better to show pricing and qualify all the leads before they fill out the form so that I don't waste my time on people who don't have the right budget. But you know what? I was like, I might as well test this out. And while I'm at it, build a whole paid marketing funnel around it. So that's what I did, and it was a bit of a distraction. It kind of slowed me down a little bit on the Ops Calendar front, but I worked on that for about a week or two, and it's now up and running and launched. It's not totally a distraction because if I can get this funnel working the way that I want it to, then that is the funding source to keep everything else going. So what I did first before I started setting up the ad campaigns, which are actually pretty similar to what you set up with like cold and then retargeting.
You just get it in a week and it takes me 6 months, whatever.
So what I did was I started by hiding the pricing, right? So now the homepage, as of today, I don't even know if I'm going to keep this. Maybe by the time this publishes, I'll revert it, but I'll probably let this run for at least a month and we'll see. The site looks basically the same, except it's missing the pricing section on the homepage. Like that's no longer there. And now there's a little pop-up. I'm using a drip pop-up standard widget on the bottom. It says looking for pricing. Enter your email address. We'll send you a pricing and demo and some other good stuff. You enter your email address there, and then you have to go check your email to get the link, which then takes you to the pricing page. And the pricing page then has our standard demo video, which I recorded months ago, and then followed by some testimonials, followed by our pricing table, which used to live on the homepage. Now it's living in this kind of like hidden pricing page, hidden. I mean, like just not linked to from anywhere. And then there's a consultation form there as well.
Time out. So pricing isn't on the homepage, but you do show pricing after somebody watches the demo video.
Basically, the demo video is kind of just there on the pricing page. You can watch the demo video or you can scroll down and see the pricing.
Okay. So you are willing to show the pricing before someone talks to you, but not before they opt in.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Like right now I'm requiring an email address just to see the pricing. But then all before you ever book a consultation, you will have seen the pricing, you'll have seen the demo video.
So this is an in-between, because generally the concept is I don't want to show you the pricing because it's high enough that I need to show you the value before I reveal the pricing. And usually that's done by a salesperson on a call.
Right. The thinking is that it will drive more email subscribers into the list, then dripping out the pieces that would lead them toward a consultation, like requesting a consultation, rather than just blurting out the pricing point right on the homepage and letting them be like, forget it. You know, I'm going off somewhere else. At least here, I'm getting their email address, I'm showing them a video and showing them the pricing so they can see some of the benefits. And I have drip automation in place so that after they enter their email address to request pricing, it checks for like if an hour goes by and they still haven't requested a consultation, because that was kind of like the next step right after that, send an email, say, hey, did you want to have a call about audience ops? And then a few days later, if they still haven't requested a consultation, it sends another email that says, hey, I know you asked about pricing and you saw the demo. Which of these options do you fall into, right? And they can click any of these trigger links. One is, audience ops looked awesome. I want to talk to you guys this week. Click here to schedule a consultation. The next one is like, audience ops looks awesome, but not quite ready yet. Maybe in a few months, click here. There'll be automation in place to follow up in a few months. The third one was like, looks awesome, but it's out of my price range. They click there. It takes them to a page that promotes lower priced things like ops calendar, like some other, you know, lower priced options.
WordPress plugin.
Yeah. Like a fourth one was just like, you guys don't do anything that I was looking for. Takes them to like a contact form. Like, okay, tell me what you want. So at least like we had that automation in place. And then even after all that, then they get dropped into lead nurturing sequences, newsletters, it just gets them into our funnel. And then who knows, maybe months down the road, more of these leads will convert into actual consultations and sales, right? So that's the thinking. Gonna test it out. And I mean, so that's been running for 2 weeks now, and we've had more leads come through. Like we're having a really good month right now. And now, granted, a lot of the sales were leads from before the change, but they just started closing more in September. But new leads are up as well. And some of those leads, I've been checking each and every one, like looking at their history and drip, like when did they find out about Audience Ops? I'd say probably half, maybe more than half, have been on the list for a while, and they just started coming around now. But the other half are brand new, and like they saw the pricing and then they requested the consultation. So it's still too, like, still too early to tell, but I think signs are looking good that at least I'll continue the test for a bit longer. And then to go along with that, about 2 weeks ago, I did, or 1 week ago, I launched some paid ads for Audience Ops, cold traffic, cold Facebook ads going to, two pillar articles. And those articles are like really focused on like how to outsource content or the benefits of, selling to strangers by doing content and building trust and that sort of stuff. So it plays into like the value proposition that we offer. And then we have retargeting ads, both from Facebook, and for the first time in a while, I'm using Google remarketing as well to try to follow people around after they've visited the site in the past 2 weeks.
I think it's important to do that because too many people get, your brand gets stuck inside of a Facebook page. And that's it's the only place to interact. And I think now it's almost a differentiator to not be there.
Yeah. I noticed that too. And like other friends, I'm checking out their like marketing agency sites. And like after I visit, like I'm seeing their ad on like New York Times, you know, and it's like, I do think that it's important because it keeps that reminder there, but it's also like when you're inside Facebook, yeah, you could reach a lot of people in Facebook, but those people are looking at baby photos and stuff, and they're not really in the mode of opting in to anything at that point. So I'm testing that out. And again, like leads are up this month. There's more activity, which I still don't know for sure if those leads originated from a clicked ad, like that attribution, the tracking, I kind of have it set up, but it's sometimes not working right. Like,
yes.
but I do know that when I'm running ads, we're getting more leads. Like, I don't know if they're just seeing the ads and then becoming a lead or they've been on the list for a while and then they saw an ad and then that reminded them. Like, but I don't know. It's hard to track, but we're having a good month. So maybe I'll just keep it going. Like that's where I'm at with it.
Right. Right. You know, 100% why things are working, but they're working. So don't change too much. No, but I like it. I also think you have, you've got more room to experiment with that pricing thing. I think what you did was, you know, it makes sense as a first step. I am just so curious of what you can do with the price if you put it in the context of a conversation, you know, like an actual,
like you have to have a conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then you know, my fear is that like, I don't have a whole sales team and a prospecting team and a qualifying team in place.
Right. It's a different thing.
You know, we would have to spend all this energy just qualifying leads, you know?
Right. Then you have to jack up the price by 3, 4, or 5X just to make that worth it. And then you kind of don't change the actual math of the business that much.
Yeah. And right now my everything, all resources, all energy has to be going into Ops Calendar. Get the SaaS off the ground. I'm not trying to change anything with Audience Ops in terms of the product, in terms of our process. That stuff is just smooth sailing. That has been awesome. We've got a team who's amazing. We've got a process for growing the team. We've got a team manager in place. We've got everything. I'm just trying to tweak on like, how can we get more leads into the funnel? Cause I know we have a really good conversion rate. Once I get on a sales call with them, like a high percentage are converting and it actually doesn't take very long for them to convert. We just need more leads. That's it. You know, so
nice. Yeah. If you could do just the right amount of work to increase that. All right. So now let's ask him about your team, and I got to bug you in just a few minutes here, but what have you been doing to keep in touch with people? I'm getting a little worried that I'm turning into like, oh, there's boss guy. He's real busy. You know, can't really talk to him that much.
I'll say that I am guilty of, or at least I feel like I'm guilty of the same thing for sure. Especially since I've been working so much on Ops Calendar, and I tell people that like they know that I'm focused on that. It's technically part of like or at least it's kind of related to audience ops, but all the people on the team in audience ops are not really working on Ops Calendar. They're right. writing,
They treat it as a client, right? You guys write content for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we have writers and a manager assigned to Ops Calendar as one of our clients. Yeah.
Right. I don't know. I think this is something I'm really going to explore.
Well, I guess I have again, I'm not good at this, or at least I feel like I'm not good at this, but part of my thing is that I don't like to have meetings. I just don't like them. I don't like going to meetings. I don't like having to have a lot of stuff on my calendar. I basically have the least possible. I have a meeting with my managers every 2 weeks, and that's the only standing call that I have with teammates. All other interaction between me and them is in Slack on a daily basis.
I think I overdo it. I have 2 to 5 meetings every single day. But that's my strength. Talking to people, it's kind of like the best thing I can do for the company is talk to people about the company every single day.
We do a lot of communication over, like, just a lot of written communication, which is good and bad. Like, it's good because it gives people a chance to really think through what they want to get across. And it does ensure that all the details get communicated, and we have a documented history. We have a lot of like threads in emails and in like Help Scout conversations and in Trello, where we can go back and reference something we talked about a month ago. We have a lot of that, but it does lose the face-to-face kind of all the communication that goes along with that, you know. One thing that we've done for a while, like sometimes off and on, just to keep like a bit of like, you know, culture and like fun, because it's like in the random channel in Slack every Friday, our team manager would send a question to the team, like, "Hey everyone, like, just here, random question, like, what's your favorite like travel memory, or post a picture of your pet, or what TV shows are you guys watching right now, or what today's Friday, so today she asked, what did you think you were going to do for your career before you got into what you're doing now?"
That's good.
And like just questions like that just start off these like day long conversations about kind of cool stuff, hearing about people's lives, you know?
Right. Not about your company that they work for. That's the key.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I take everyone out to lunch like every 2-3 weeks. That's been fun. We have a lot of funny shit in Slack. That's the truth. Slack is the substitute for corporate culture. Like one of the our guys is, he's so good with GIFs. He's so fast.
I'm jealous of people who are like awesome at GIFs. Every time I try to do it, I end up like searching for like a half an hour. I'm like, yes. Fuck it. The moment is over.
Within 30 seconds, the perfect one. So you get kind of known for funny stuff like that. We have an anger vent channel. That just, you can just come in, I just spent half an hour on the phone with Bank of America. I can't believe, you know, just like get it out there. And then that was funny for a while. And then we just started a love vent. So you can be positive, you know. Right. So we have fun stuff like that. And I think in person, it's easier. And then, yeah, I think I've just been thinking about it just because as the team just keeps growing, I just kind of have this sense of like, do I really know what's happening right now? Like, I kept talking about one-on-ones and I just never actually got around to do it. So I created a Calendly link, and on Wednesdays from like 2 to 4 p.m., that's basically what my job is. So I just tell everyone, okay, grab a slot. Yeah. And what I'm hoping for the conversations, I haven't done a session yet. Next week's the first. I hope that it is not just work talk, that it's more, how's it going? How are you? You know, you just moved to town. How's that going? And how's work? And how's the, you know, so I hope it's like this open channel so that if something happens and it's like, this person is really bothering me because they keep asking me to help them on something and I want to help them, but it's not my job. Like, I don't know what to do. I hope people can come to me with that stuff.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I found, maybe this is a fault of maybe I'm doing something wrong, but maybe it's working, is, I found that like whenever I used to have like full team meetings or even in my manager's meetings, those are getting kind of big now too. Like most of the team is just like super quiet. Like they're not in these group settings. they're not really giving a lot of feedback. And then there was a time when I was doing one-on-one calls with people on the team, just to kind of check in. And like most of the time, they're pretty like, I mean, not much. Things are going pretty well. Like, I don't have any feedback, good or bad. Like, that's it. Like, so what changed was our team manager, Kat, has a part of her role is to do one-on-ones with people on the team. And she also does these like writer sessions where she'll pull in like two writers at a time and they'll just do like a talk over the topics that they're writing about that week and help each other out and give each other constructive feedback and stuff. But she's also done one-on-ones with everybody on the team on a regular monthly basis. And then she just kind of reports up to me, just like general trends, or like this person kind of complained about this thing, or it seems like this person has been having trouble doing this. And like, I think that the team tends to be more open with her than they are with me. You know, there's just something about the boss being in the room that, you know, people don't really talk, you know, and they know that, like, I do try to be transparent about the fact that, like, first of all, everything discussed is pretty transparent, and they know that Kat does report stuff to me, but it's, I think there's just like a comfort level of like, not necessarily complaining, but just talking about any sort of issues, or, you know, the feeling of like, no, and also like people don't want to throw other people under the bus, especially to the boss. But sometimes you need to do that. Sometimes there are issues that need to be brought up, and there's got to be some way to get that stuff channeled somehow. And that's what we've been doing.
Yeah, it's tricky. All right, cool, man. Well, I think we need to call it a day. I think next week I'd like to talk about product and product decisions. That's our biggest theme is features to add. How quickly, how slowly.
I'm in that boat too, with Ops Calendar right now too. Yeah.
Yep. It's like you want to go faster, but not too fast, and you have to prioritize, and how much should be based on data versus gut feel. So yeah, I think that's a good topic for us for next week.
Good stuff.
All right, man. Have a great weekend.
All right, you too.